like, oh, what are you going to do? Just make Instagram videos all day? Like, oh, idiot. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. There was this massive buck. Like, I'm talking Bambi's daddy. And I remember just being like, holy shit. That was my first introduction to how people make hunting look on the internet. And I was like, wow, I had no idea about this stuff at all. Zero. Then all of a sudden, this man pulls out an Uzi, legit Uzi, and he just points it towards the beach, fully automatic. Nobody has a choice with how they're raised, but they can learn how they want their life to be. And my platform's definitely helped a lot of people see, you know, how you can live a life. This is Vaughn Neville, the Man Spot. You are listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
Our culture needs people that are leaders and not people that are waiting for somebody else to show them how to do it.
Those fields of tofu, that was formerly habitat for wildlife. You're killing off wildlife by being a vegetarian just as much as a hunter when he kills a deer.
I'm like, well, you see that bush right there? There's your bathroom.
Yeah. My dad wears a Levi jacket. He sits in front of a sagebrush and he tells me the best camo is hold still.
Not to Donnie Vinson this, but be relentless in everything you do. Don't crap out, go back to the truck with excuses or whatever.
Okay, assume I get a deer. How do I cut it up to fit into a Honda Civic?
Just get outside. Just get outside and go. Because once you do, it's all gravy from there.
Hey, this is Zach Griffith.
This is Hannah Barron.
This is Jason Phelps with Phelps Game Calls.
Hey, guys. This is Cody Rich from the Rich Outdoors Podcast.
What's up, guys? This is Chad Mendez.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, yo, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, y'all, before we hop into today's episode, I want to ask a huge favor from each and every one of y'all that are listening. If you could just take a moment, pause the podcast, and head over to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a quick rating and review. Honestly, y'all, it just takes you a quick second. I appreciate all y'all that have been listening, but if you could just take this one step further, leave a quick rating and review on either iTunes or Stitcher, this helps so much with the growth of the podcast and its discoverability. So y'all, if you could take that moment right now, pause the podcast, head on over, leave that rating and review, or if you wanted to leave a rating on Spotify as well, that is also huge. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Now y'all, hopping into today's episode. Today, I have Vaughn Neville of The Man Spot on. Y'all, I'm super excited to sit down and talk to Vaughn. He's an awesome dude with an absolutely epic beard, a love for our country and a love for the Second Amendment, and just manly stuff in general. So y'all, I'm super excited to have Vaughn on and talk with him. So y'all, with no further ado, let's get into today's episode with Vaughn Neville of The Man Spot. So here's a question for you. Is it like The Man Spot is your alter ego? Like that's kind of like your other name, or is it Vaughn Neville, The Man Spot, not Vaughn Neville of The Man Spot?
I guess it depends on who I talk to and how they interpret it, because I've literally gone to a SHOT Show, bumped into people, and I'm like, they're like, oh, Man Spot, how are you? And I'm like, hey, how are you doing? What's going on? And they're like, what's wrong with your voice? And I'm like, oh, I was like, he doesn't know that there's a difference between Vaughn Neville and my alter ego, you know, the content character, The Man Spot. I'm like, oh dear. There's a difference. Hollywood is not real. Neither is Superman. I'm sorry.
I love that. So yeah, it definitely is. what's wrong with your voice? So definitely is the alter ego. So
yeah.
How did the idea for the Man Spot come about? Like this alter ego, this brand, the Instagram, because it all started kind of with Instagram, right?
Yeah. It started with Instagram. Kind of just a funny story there is because I love off-roading. I love guns. I love my hobbies of just manly things. And I remember at the time, me and my wife were pregnant with our first baby. And I was just tired of Facebook. And I was like, I'm going to delete it. And she was like, well, you should start up an Instagram. And I was like, cool. So I started up an Instagram. And then I was like, she was like, yeah, it's just pictures. And you follow the pictures you want. If you don't want to follow something, it won't pop up in your feed. And it's nothing will pop up in your feed that is unsolicited. And I was like, oh, cool. So I was like, what am I going to post? And so I started posting my guns, my cars, and people were like, huh, you kind of like to show off, don't you? And I was like, oh, okay. I'll respect your opinion. So I was like, well, now I'm going to make a hobby page, a page for my hobbies. That way I'm not bragging, that people can just watch this page for what it is. And I was like, what am I going to name this page? And I was like, huh, I kind of need a spot that's kind of like Target is for women. I was like, I need a spot like that for men. And I was like, the man corner, the man place. I was like, the man spot. Got it. I had no idea I'd be called, you know, the man spot, because I literally was just making it a spot where a man can go to and it's just cool, manly things. So that's how the man spot was born. And little did I know at the time that whatever you make your handle on Instagram is what people will know you as. So that's how the man spot was started.
It's such like a weird thing that you can feel. I've probably talked about this a million times, but you can feel like you totally know someone, like an old friend that you've known forever that you've never met in person, and you barely even remember their actual name because you solely know them as some sort of Instagram handle. Like,
And over time, like my alter ego took over, you know, for a couple of years where I would just be literally an entertainer. I would just try to entertain with the alter ego. And then I was like, okay, I'm, you know, social media is so fake and so full of whatever people want to show. I was like, well, I need to show face and show that I'm a real person. So that's when I started talking about politics, talking about what was important to me. And then I'd integrate and show my family. I'd show, you know, my kids going to the hospital, and I'd show, you know, issues that come up, you know, victories, losses. So I really started using my Instagram, the man spot, to show I'm a real person. I go through real issues. I have my challenges. I'm not perfect. And I would always try to throw in, you know, my geriatrics with my wife, with my kids and stuff along those lines. So a lot of people grew to relate to me in a lot of ways, and like, oh, he's just not a social media personality. He's a real person. So that's why a lot more people started to relate to me along those lines as well.
So what then takes it just from the fun Instagram account where you're sharing stuff with people to now it's, you have the website and you're selling merch, and it's turned into just more than just like a fun Instagram thing about you and your family.
Yeah. So the story of the man spot, of me actually doing man spot full time, is I used to be a door-to-door salesman full time, and I did that for 11 years. And I was selling alarm systems door-to-door. So kind of like those pest control guys that knock on your door and they're like, hey, we'd like to sell you some pest control. I was one of the alarm sales guys. And my family was living in Texas at the time, and my Instagram was kind of blowing up. So I thought, you know, I had 60,000 followers. And I had a few side marketing deals. And I remember looking over at my wife and I was like, hey, I can do this full time. And we can, because we had our house in Utah at the time and we were living in Houston, Texas. And I was like, if I quit my job and I focus solely on social media, I can do this full time. This is when I had 60,000 followers. And I was like, but I need your support. And she was like, okay, if we're going back to Utah, I'll give you my support. And I was like, okay. So quit my job and just started doing social media full time. I lived on credit cards for probably about 8 months. And then bam, that's when the tide changed for me to get more marketing deals, to start up merch and stuff along those lines. And I think that was my moment of where I burnt my ship and I didn't want to look back, and I had no choice but to move forward with this because I kind of knew social media was going to be the new norm. And a lot of people made fun of me for it. Everybody at my old work thought I would be back really soon. And they're like, oh, what are you going to do? Just make Instagram videos all day and don't support your family? Idiot. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And yeah, that's exactly what I did. So that was my moment of burning my ship. And I didn't give myself another option to fail.
And I mean, so you started with, you had a decent base. It wasn't like you literally created your Instagram and were like, all right, we're going to live off of this. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You had built up a decent base.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I was making around maybe $2,000 extra a month on top of my job. And then I was like, oh, and that was just part-time because I treated, when I was building my Instagram, I literally treated it like a part-time job. And that's what I told my wife when she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I am doing this on the side because I'm treating it like a part-time job because I don't want to knock doors the rest of my life. I want to do something else. And that's exactly what happened is I treated it like a part-time job. And then I transitioned and I was like, I could treat it like a full-time job. And my main motivation was my son. You know, I remember having that dad moment when I was holding my son and I was like, man, I hope he has every ambition to go after any dream he wants, to go after whatever he wants, and he's not afraid. And then I had that moment that I was like, I am the biggest hypocrite because I am afraid to go after my dreams. I am afraid to go after my ambitions. I am afraid to be start my own business and be my own boss. So my son was my motivation because I didn't want him to grow up and I tell him to go after his dreams when I was afraid to go after my own dreams, be my own boss. And because my big motivation also was I want to be there for my kids when they wake up. I want to be for them when they go to sleep.
I think, you know, it's so important that you not only sit there and encourage your kids and you sit there and tell them that they can, like you said, chase their dreams and achieve these great things. Even if people are laughing at them, telling them it's a stupid idea that they can do that. It's so critical to remind them of that, but it's so much more critical to live that out in your own life and show that to them as well, rather than just, again, telling them. You know, it's so much more impactful, so much more powerful when they see you doing that rather than just telling
them. And obviously with what I had created, I was like, you know, I can actually go out and hike with my kids. I can teach them how to hunt. I can spend real time with my kids in the way I want to, that quality time. Because my dad was working so much when I was growing up, he didn't have time, you know, to take me hunting. I think I remember three explicit times when he took us hunting, and one of those was just driving around in the truck and like, do you see anything? No. And then another time was like hiking up. He hiked maybe a mile and then he was like, I'm done. Just like, okay. So it was just, you know, for me, I just wanted to make that change, you know, have those memories sitting in a tree stand with my kids. So that was another motivation for that, is to get that quality outdoors time.
So you're living in Utah, you're working in Texas. Where did you actually grow up though?
I grew up in Idaho. So I was born in Sun Valley, Idaho, grew up outside of Haley, which really close to Sun Valley, you know, so very mountainous, beautiful area.
But so yeah, you grew up in like the headquarters of the outdoors, you know, in the Rocky Mountains, you know, short of, you got Montana, you got Idaho, you got Utah. It's kind of like, this area is like where the outdoors, I mean, it's the truest in my mind. But you didn't really get that experience with your dad growing up hunting then.
No, because he was working. He worked so much. I mean, he was a school teacher and then he worked for the Forest Service in the summertime. So he was a firefighter. So he would always be out on fires, you know, so, And when he wasn't teaching school, he was also driving activity bus. So he was just a hustler. You know, he had six kids and he didn't make a lot of money. So he was just out there trying to make it happen. So for me in hunting, I kind of, you know, I'd say a lot of it was self-taught, you know, going out with friends, but I've actually shot more deer, you know, by myself, just going out with a rifle and being like, doo-doo-doo, here we go, than, you know, than anything else.
So was it your kind of experience and the stuff you were doing with creating the Man Spot that led you into hunting, or was it something you were already kind of doing yourself that? Or
I would say, you know, with my work, you know, because I've always loved going outdoors and hunting, but when I go out hunting, I love it more so for the connection of nature, and because you're just out there in it and you learn to appreciate nature. So I'm in it more for that connection of Mother Nature than I am actually for the harvest itself. But the harvest is what I love because it's the stories that come from that. And so I grew up, you know, just wanting that. But then when I started selling alarm systems, our peak season was right in the midst of hunting season. So I never was able to go out and hunt, you know, virtually like for 11 years. I'd always talk about it and want it, yearn for it. But I was like, how am I going to get back into it? So since doing the Man Spot, I've been able to have the opportunity to start getting back into it. But then right when Man Spot started, you know, I had three kids just boom, 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 boom. And obviously when you have three kids, that's going to slow up, you know, you going out and hunting because you got the responsibilities of, you know, or the wife being like, yeah, you're not going hunting. You got to stay and watch these kids. So I'm just like, my time is coming. It will happen. But I still have been able to go out and at least get a mule deer every year in the midst of my, you know, my busy schedule.
So are you officially a Montana resident now, or are you still waiting for your turnover? Okay. I wasn't sure when you moved out. So, so you're going to be out this year to be chasing elk, muleys.
Oh, this year's going to be a whole new ball game for me, my man. So I got myself 120 acres and, up on the property 2 weeks ago, five wolves were spotted on the property. And then a cougar was spotted, wolverine, bobcat. So I've got a little mixture of everything. And of course, you know, given there's moose, elk, deer, whitetail deer. I mean, I'm really fortunate for the piece of property I got because virtually I will be able to hunt from my back porch. Which some people are like, that's not hunting. I'm just like, hey, I did it like the campers, you know. I'm camping where I'm hunting. Or living where I'm camping, whatever you want to call it.
Hey man, unless you've got him locked in a pen, hunting's hunting. Like
I move into the animal's house. That's what I'm doing.
I mean, just because your blind happens to be a lot bigger and a lot more comfortable than a 50, you know, than a pop up tent blind. Hey man.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So I'm well versed and experienced. I knew what I wanted for my hunting, you know. So I have yet to make the really cool stories are yet to come because I just knew what I wanted the Man Spot to kind of turn into, and that is having people experience a lot of the outdoors. Because virtually from my channel, people vicariously live through my experiences, and people who are sitting in an office, you know, 8 hours a day. That's why they love social media, because they can vicariously live through somebody who's like, wow, this guy's got it figured out.
Well, and so that was one thing I kind of wanted to ask is you started the Man Spot just, you know, with this intention of sharing your hobbies. Like what's the goal now with, what are you trying to achieve with this? And you kind of, I think just touched on it a little bit, but what are you really trying to achieve with the Man Spot?
So obviously I'm also a very political. So I've also gone with the Man Spot.
I'm shocked.
Oh my goodness. Right. So yeah. So I've actually gone to a lot of political events and rallies, and I've been a keynote speaker. I've gone to Berkeley when Antifa was there throwing glass bottles and getting really violent. You know, I went to the biggest pro gun rally in Virginia, where over like 30,000 people showed up, you know, armed, and that ended up being a peaceful rally. And so I've been to Pennsylvania. I've been to a lot of different places where I've been able to express our Second Amendment rights and the importance thereof. So also with my platform, I think I've been able to use it in a way that helps people understand the importance of being able to stand up for our rights. And I've been able to do that because so many people have said, I didn't realize the importance of my rights until I started watching your videos, or I listened to your rant, or I listened to this. So I want to use it for the all out good that I can. Obviously, I've had to slow down with being so political, because with social media being the way that it is, they can cut my platform at any given moment. So that's how I make 100% of my living. So I have had to take it easy on my political rants on social media, because I don't want to get deleted, because I still need to be able to provide for my family. But like you said, what is the overall goal? With my 120 acres that I bought, I plan on making that kind of like an activity center, and being able to host gun events, host hunting events, and get my guide license for people to take them, actually hunting. So that's just something I want to be able to shift the man spot focus towards. But overall, just making sure people have a better, there's a different way to be raised. And a lot of people nobody has a choice with how they're raised, but they can learn how they want their life to be. And my platform's definitely helped a lot of people see, how you can live a life.
Well, and that's definitely one of the things the reason I started my whole platform. And I love hearing that, because, we talked a little bit before, but I didn't quite tell you, I didn't grow up hunting. I didn't grow up with the outdoors. If you had told me 20 years ago that I would be all tatted up with a beard, living in Montana, running my own business and hunting elk and doing all this crap, I would have laughed at you. All my friends would have laughed at you. Anyone that has known me for it would have been a joke.
Like that.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Southern California. I grew up going to the beach and stuff. And so I got into hunting as an adult, and it's tough, especially as a dude, it's like, we're guys and guys get chesty, and it's hard to ask those questions about something we feel like we should already probably know about,
Mm-hmm.
And it's like talking about cars or talking about hunting or this or that, or, gun stuff. It can be intimidating. And as a dude, as an adult, if you didn't grow up with it, you have no reason to know it. Going into these cultures can be an intimidating thing. So I love seeing other platforms and other people that have an excitement of finding other people that maybe didn't grow up with it, or, grew up in a place where it wasn't accessible, or just grew up with a family that didn't do that stuff, but they've developed an interest later in life. And having those access to those resources and those assets and those platforms is so huge. And I speak from personal experience. I wouldn't have been able to do what I'm doing now if it wasn't for podcasts and YouTube videos and any and all sorts of classes you can take. It's wild what's available out there.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's a beautiful thing about social media, is because people discover hobbies they never thought they would ever have. And they're able to do that based on, people they follow, or, research they do. They're able to be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I'm not limited to how I was raised. I'm limited to what I want to do.
Well, and it's the cool thing is too, with someone like you, you're not just a hunting influencer, or I hate using the term influencer, but it is what it is. it's like, I feel like I need to brush my teeth every time I use the word.
It's that rotten taste we've all got in our mouths, and we're just like,
I don't want to say it, but it's true. but someone like yourself, you're not just a hunting influencer. You have these other feelers. And so somebody may come in from one of your political rants, or they may come in from some cool gun stuff or whatever, or, whatever it happens to be. And they may discover hunting through that, or it may be vice versa. You may have someone that grew up hunting, but they just kind of kept to themselves. Maybe they weren't a very political person. Maybe they don't go out and they don't vote. They just don't really like to get involved. And then suddenly, through what you're sharing, you're influencing, you're influencing them to do this stuff, to whether it's to improve their lives, to improve their interactions with others, or, you know, what they're putting out into the world. I think platforms like yours are super important for stuff like that, where it's not just, you don't just have your one little niche and that's it.
Yeah. And another thing about me is, you know, I did not serve in the military. I tried, but because of my asthma, I was told I could not. And there is a huge community out there of people who wanted to join the military who were limited. And they're just like, what do I do now? So there's also a big community of people who have reached out to me because they're like, hey, I really like how patriotic you are, regardless of your abilities to serve in the military. And a lot of people, you know, don't, I mean, some people look down, I've been looked down upon so much and hated because I am as patriotic and I am, and I love guns as much as I do, but I was not able to serve, you know? So I've also gotten a lot of hate as well as praise for, you know, doing what I do. And that just comes with the internet. You know, there's always going to be haters out there, but I think I get a lot more positivity out of anything else than negativity. And that's why I love continuously doing what I do, because it helps people. And I love helping people and letting them see something from a different viewpoint that they never saw before.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So, you know, as somebody that, you know, you grew up with a little bit of hunting, but you didn't really get seriously into it until later in life. What were some of the obstacles you encountered as you were trying to learn and figure out a lot of this stuff?
Oh, man. So get this. So my parents, you know, I got five boys and one girl in my family. And I think it was like our 14th or Christmas. Every boy got a 30-06 for Christmas. And mine was a Savage 30-06 bolt action. And I remember getting it and I felt so cool. I was like, I am James Bond. Like, I've got this rifle. It will kill. But I remember I took that out hunting with me and some friends. We just went after school. We're just like, doo-ba-doo, doo-ba-doo, driving in the old box square body Chevy. And we would do this after school, you know, for days. And I remember we just came around a corner and we saw this buck, you know, the buck, just the horns were barely going past his ears. But hey, they went past its ears. And I remember like, oh, get out of the truck. So I got out of the truck, put the rifle, you know, on the hood. And I remember just posting up and I look over at my friends and I'm like, this is the moment of truth. And they're like, just shoot it, dude. And I shot, you know, missed. And then they're like, hurry, hurry. And I, you know, load another round and shoot. And then boom, I'm like, did I hit it? And they're like, you hit its leg. And I'm like, oh no. So the deer's on the run and I'm like trying to shoot it again. And then I hit it again, hits its, you know, spine. And then I run up to it, you know, and they're like, just put it out of its misery. You know, I shoot, you know, I miss, goes through his ear, and then I shoot and he's dead. And then I was like, shit, what was wrong? And my optic was not sighted in. Oh. So, you know, brand new little, you know, teen hunter thinking, oh, I got a gun. All I got to do is take it out and shoot it. I had no idea that I needed to sight it in. You know, props to the factory, because I was still able to bring down and harvest an animal from that. but had no idea distance, gauging, anything like that. And I think it would have come to, would have helped. Because I mean, hunter safety, it took hunter safety, but you know, it took that with like a lever action 30-30 with no optic, you know, just iron sights. So just little things like that growing up and you're like, oh yeah, huh, should have taken it out beforehand and sighted it in. And at that point, it's like, well, how far is it sighted in? You know, so these little minor details in hunting, I'm sighting in your optic, you know, that was from Walmart. How do you do it? Who can teach you how to do it? And it's that mentorship that I was missing.
So, as you were growing up then and learning this, did you find any mentors along the way?
No, actually I didn't. So fast forward, 2 years, I'm a junior. Yeah. Like a junior in high school.
By the way, when I'm picturing you in these stories, even at 14, you still have the full long beard.
Yes. Perfect. That's exactly what you should do too. You know, with army surplus gear on, no doubt. But yeah, I remember I just had, an old mechanic, you know, one onesie zip up, you know, that was kind of thermaled. I remember wearing some, army surplus boots. And I had an old, you know, army surplus hat from a Desert Storm that I took out hunting. And it was the last day of hunting season. And my parents were going to Twin Falls, Idaho. You know, we lived in Haley, Idaho. And they're like, okay, Vaughn, we're going to go to Twin Falls to do some grocery shopping. You want to come? And I was like, nope. And I was like, it's the last day of hunting season. Can I go hunting? And they were like, no, you cannot go hunting alone. And they were like, promise you won't go hunting. And I was like, I promise I won't go hunting. And when they left, I literally remember just throwing on my hunter gear that I just told you about. And I went hiking about 2 miles just into there's a mountain called Red Devil Mountain in Haley, Idaho. And there was a little canyon up there that I just went hunting in. And it was the last day of hunting season. And I remember it was the greatest hunt of my life. I mean, we're talking, you know, I have asthma, so I'm just sitting there hiking through these trails with my inhaler, just, and I'm just like, here we go. I'm still going to do it. I'm going to get a deer. And I didn't even know how to scout for deer at that time. I didn't know, you know, you could be walking around for hours and a deer can just hold perfectly still and you're walking right past them, you know, at 100 yards. Like, I had no idea. But I remember hiking to the top of this mountain and I all of a sudden see like kind of the mountain moving and I'm like, oh, what's that? And I'm like, holy shit, that's like 8 deer running from me. And I just remember seeing them running. I'm like, okay, is there a buck? And I'm like, holy shit, there's a buck. Yeah. So I'm like trying to like head off this herd of deer and they're running and I'm running. And then I remember just, okay, if I shoot in front of the deer, maybe that will scare them to go back up the mountain towards me. And that's exactly what I did. I started shooting in front of the deer and the rocks chipping and everything made them turn around and start running towards me. And I'm like, oh, this is a good thing. And then I'm still puffing my inhaler and stuff. And I'm just chasing the deer. And then they get up on a ridge to the left. They were on the ridge to the right going down. Now they're on the ridge to the left. And I just chase them, you know, probably for me to catch up to where they were at, it took me like an hour. And then the mountain went straight down and I was like, okay, I'm back to not seeing anything. That was a lot of good action I just saw. So I'm like walking down the mountain through the brush. And all of a sudden I see this doe jump straight up, like probably like 10 yards in front of me and it goes left. And I heard something go right down below as well. And I was like, I remember an old timer said, the doe will distract you from the buck. It is their job to protect the buck. I don't know how true that was, but I remember, okay, this doe is tricking me. I'm going to go right. So I went right and there was this massive buck. Like I'm talking Bambi's daddy, just galloping. And I remember just being like, holy shit. And I just start blasting, miss, and then miss. And then I remember just putting my rifle to lead him way in front and I shot and I thought I missed and I was like, shit. So I'm running after him, trying to load 30-06 shells in my savage bolt action. And I just remember jumping over this bush and then there's this dead buck just right there. And I'm like, holy shit. I, you know, it was like, I had the surreal moment. I felt like a dog, you know how dogs chase cars.
Mm-hmm.
What would that dog do if it chased and actually got the car? What would it do? I was that dog that fucking has been chasing a car and finally I got the car and I'm just like, what do I do now?
What?
Oh, shit.
What do I do with my hands?
Oh, man. That's heavy. And again, yeah, that's like a tough moment. I've talked to a few people about that. It's like your first hunt, like where you're back there and you take something. And especially if like a deer's one thing, deer are big enough, but like you get some like an elk or whatever, and you get back there and you look at it and you're like, well, shit.
Oh, now the work begins. Oh.
Man, maybe wish I'd hunted a little bit longer. This is going to get tired real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I was just like, what do I do? And then I get out my knife, you know, I cut its throat and I'm like, okay, step one, he is dead. Okay. Wow. And then I'm like, okay, I got to start dragging it out of here. And I start dragging it out. And then I just hear all the guts inside. And I'm like, I got to gut this thing. Shit. I was in way over my head at this. So I bail and I just run back and I called the farmer whose farm was closest to this little valley by Red Devil Mountain. And I'm like, I need to call my friends. So I call up my friends and I'm like, I got a deer. I need help field dressing it and dragging it out. I'll buy you guys McDonald's. And they're like, fuck yeah. So they meet me up there. We hike up, you know, 2 miles, field dress it. They teach me what to do because I didn't even know how to do that. I mean, when I got my first deer, again, we just drug it down, backed the truck up, loaded it up, and we took it back and their dad did everything. So I was just like, yeah, hunter safety, they teach you that in the books, but actually seeing blood on your hands, you're like, what? Mm-hmm. I was like, and my knife, you know, my knife was just little buck knife that, yeah, throw that thing away. I know people have great stories about buck knives. I'm not trying to limit their ability, but my ability of just shooting a buck was way beyond what I even thought possible. Remember, I was a dog that just caught a car. But yeah, they got it down and I learned some valuable lessons because I just wanted to be the big, you know, white hunter and get the big buck and be like, hey, look at me. Had no thought of logistics, no thought if it would ever happen, zero. But yeah, that will probably be my greatest hunting story. You know, who shoots at a herd of deer in front of them and they actually turn around and go the other way?
I was sitting there, I'm like, oh yeah, that's gonna work. And you're like, yeah, and it worked. I'm like, you have to be shitting me right now.
Yeah. Like, dude, I don't even know. But yeah, so mentorship I think would be greatly important, especially for my kids now, because I was just geriatric out there, like doo-ba-doo. Now, you know, colors didn't matter. Like, you know, now they've got all the crazy tactical camo that when you're hunting a deer, the deer can't even really see you anyways with black and white. But now the hunting deer, you're just like, dang. Yeah, I had none of that. You know, I could barely afford like the ammo. Who knows how old that 30-06 ammo was that I was using? It was probably grandpa's from like literally 1906 when the 30-06 was just invented.
Holy hell. I mean, it's wild though, because that says a lot. And you know, we were talking about the earlier about how hard and intimidating it can be to enter into hunting. And so much of that is, I was guilty of it. I also just like all the gear and want to collect it. But so often we get so focused on like, okay, I need to have the right camo. I need to have the right pack. I need to have the right boots and the right, you know, this and the right that and the right that. The right gear is the gear you have that'll get you out into the woods and let you have an ethical, legal hunt. That's the gear that's important, not, you know, you don't have to have a full set of Sitka. You don't have to have the latest Hoyt bow or the latest Savage rifle.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny. I'm actually working with a hunting brand right now. And I told them, I was like, guys, you need to come out with a brand of, you know, come out, not with brand, come out with a line of hunting clothing that and call it the way grandpa did it. and you make the, it's the same material. It's just the print is different, and you make the print, you know, flannel. You make the print like just straight brown, ugly brown. I was like, the way grandpa did it, cause they didn't, yeah, they didn't care. They were just like, yep, going hunting. And you know, the, you know, Elmer Fudd, you know, hats over the ear, you know, and the, there's nostalgia there, man.
That would be amazing. Even if it was just like an April 1st, like April Fool's joke or something, or like one of the big brands comes out and they're like, we have our technical hunting camo, and like the technical hunting pants, they look like denim though.
Yes.
And it's the plaid, and it's like the jacket, but it's like the plaid. Oh my gosh. I would piss myself from laughing. Like that would be amazing. Yeah.
And honestly, I think I'd probably buy one just because I'm like, I want to do it the way grandpa did it.
Oh, you know for a fact. There is no question in my mind that that shit would sell if somebody actually released it.
Because people need it. People, and it, again, it's the nostalgia. Hey, what do you... And then people show up with all their crazy Sitka gear, you know, Kuyu, and you're just like, oh, wow, nice. Because it's a flex. If you're matching your boots, your pants, your hat, your gloves, that is a major flex. It's like, yeah, let's go get them coyotes, motherfucker. You show up the way grandpa did it, that's a flex too, because it's like, damn, you don't even give a fuck.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, I feel like that is a much bigger flex at that point. Like when you roll out in the plaid and the jeans and you still get it done. That's
exactly
money right there. Oh shoot, man. But you know, I do think that's super important. Like just to remember, it's like, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the social media. And like you said, social media is so fake where, you know, a lot of these guys that are hunting with all this amazing gear, they've built this up over 15, 20 years of hunting, you know, or half of them, you know, are working with these brands and they're not dropping $5,000 on a full set of, you know, four season set of Sitka.
It was funny. I specifically remember, a hunt that I went on. It was with Silencer Co. down in Texas. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go hunt these deer. And I was like, oh, cool, man. Yeah, I'll go. Cool. And then we're in this tree stand and I'm like, what are we doing? And they're like, we're hunting. And I'm like, I've never done this before. You know, so we just sit here and we wait for them to come to us. Cause I've always been just like cruising in the truck, walking, hiking in the mountains. This whole thing of like sitting in a stand, I was like, what happens? And then before you know it, like dusk comes and then, you know, there's a corn feeder and then it suddenly spins and I'm like, whoa, what was that? And they're like, that's the timer. It lets out the corn. And I'm like, and then the deer come and they're like, yeah. And I'm like, and that's when we shoot them. So this is like, you know, this is like 5 years ago. Right. And I'm just like, where's the sportsmanship in this shit? Like, so anyways, they're like, well, this is what we pay for. You know, this is right now. I'm like, this is not fucking hunting. So anyways, the guy's, he's like looking and he's like, okay, that's the deer you're going to shoot. Cause you know, there's a lot of deer getting a free meal there. And I'm like, okay, I shoot, it goes down. And I'm like, and they're like, all right, great job. All right, let's go. And I'm like, that was it. That was it. So then we go over there and they're like, okay, get the deer. Put it over here. Let's get a picture. And of course, the cameraman is like there waiting. He's like, okay, well, we got to make sure we're shifted away from the, you don't want the corn feeder in the background because then people will eat you on the internet. And I'm like, I'm eating myself up right now from what we just did. Like, I'm like, because I thought we were going to go on a hunt. When somebody says, hey, we're going on a hunt, I'm like, heck yeah. I didn't know this was like a, you know, a staged thing. And, but of course, you know, they set it up and they're like, okay, now we're going to take the picture closer to the horns so the animal looks bigger. And I'm like, trick photography, motherfuckers. I can't believe this shit. And then that was my first introduction of like hunting and the internet and how that all works and how people perceive it, how they view it. And I'm like, so we at least are harvesting this. And I'm like, okay, I'm getting it. And that was my first introduction to how people make hunting look on the internet. And I was like, wow. I had no idea about this stuff at all. Zero. So when you say people won't make the social media what it is, that was my first experience with it. And I'm like, oh, wow. Because I'm just like this pure like new hunter. Like, I don't know, like, you can fake stuff or this or that. But now I'm well-versed.
Well, it's... And I'm not one to like hate on any type of hunting or anything. Like, I definitely like, if you're telling me we're going hunting, I'm thinking we're going back in the woods and we're working our asses off for this. Like, again, like, I've gone and hunted over feeders. I've gone down to Texas and hunted friends' ranches, hunted hogs over feeders. I just this year I was down in Texas at a friend's ranch and got to shoot a fallow deer doe and a red sheep ewe over a feeder. And it was just a cool experience. And it was, they were doing a new hunters training program, and it was teaching them like literally from, I've never seen a gun in my life to, hey, look, I just cooked a meal with the deer that I just shot, processed and harvested myself.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I honestly feel like that's a can be a good way to introduce someone, because it removes a lot of the variables.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And for me, like, my whole thing was, we're going hunting. So my whole perception of hunting was like, okay, this is different. Like, I had no idea that people even like really did that. Like, I heard of like tree stands and bow hunters and that type of stuff. I just had never heard of feeding, you know, and doing that type of ability. And obviously now getting into more of the hunter world, I understand why they do that, where, you know, and the benefits of it. My whole thing is like, and like we talked about from the beginning, like, I'm a hunter coming into the educational overall skew of things, because I didn't start up the Manspot from hunting. It's kind of my journey, kind of like you have. You started off as something and you've grown into it. So I'm not trying to diss on anybody. My whole thing was, my definition of hunting was just a bit different than sitting, you know, in a tree stand.
And it's definitely a surprise. You're like expecting one thing and you roll in and you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought a deer would walk in and then we get out and like, we like stalk him, you know, the now, okay, we saw a deer, now we stalk him. It was like, no, we're going to stay here. So for me, my whole idea of the thought, maybe I'm just partially, I don't want to say the word retarded, because that word can be offensive, but I was just very uneducated.
Yeah. I mean, and my whole thing with it is, you know, and listen, it's like one thing. Yeah. You're long arming a fish. Maybe you're holding the deer's head forward so the antlers look a little bit bigger, whatever it is. Like, yeah, there's some stuff. It is what it is. But I'm also never one to pretend like something isn't what it is. So anyone that follows me can tell you, like, if I go shoot something over a corn feeder, I'm going to tell that story and I'll be like, this is what I was doing. This is why I was doing it. Mm-hmm. And I tell that whole story, the reasoning behind it.
It's the transparency.
Yeah. And that's all I care about. Like, I'm like, as long as it's legal, ethical, and has like, and doesn't harm this public, the public's perception of hunting, and to the point of where it causes trouble and people start banning things, California. Sorry, I got something caught in my throat there. You know, it's just like, as long as I'm like, you do, just be authentic. Like, why don't try and pretend like I spent 6 days in the mountains hunting this deer. No, you didn't. You drank coffee in the lodge this morning. You took an ATV to a heated box blind that's nicer than my apartment. Like, what the hell?
They hoisted the deer up with the electric, crane, and they dressed it for you.
You didn't even touch the deer when you took the picture. They, like, laid it in your lap.
I've got blood on my hands. No, that's ketchup.
So do I have to actually like get blood on my hands when we're taking the pictures? No. We have ketchup for that. Makes you look rugged.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, and for people who like that type of thing, I'm like, cool. But like, for me, it's like the transparency. You tell the story, I'm like, cool. Hey, that's awesome. You were able to afford a hunt like that. Like, it's like, I could never afford anything like that. So good on you. But again, that's part of the hunting community. You find out who's full of shit And you also find out, you know, who the real OGs are, you know? So I love it for that aspect too. Cause I mean, everybody who hunts has stories, and I love stories. And, in fact, can I share one right now?
Absolutely.
Okay, man. So I'm in Alaska by the Naknek River. I'm 17 years old, and I went fishing up there on one of those commercial fishing boats. Anyways, there was this old guy who used to do set netting, and so he's got a little skiff. Anyways, he was like, hey, he went to like my boss, who I called the captain, and he's like, hey, can I borrow your boy for a minute? And they called me the boy. And I was like, wow, okay, they're literally treating me like a wrench. Hey, Billy, can I borrow that 9/16 wrench? Yeah, of course, Joe, take it. He literally loaned me like a wrench. It's like, let me take the boy. I got to go over to like Kodiak Island or something. He's like, the tide is going to be coming in and I got to go before it's down. So we're cruising out to this island. Probably, you know, it's not the Kodiak. It was some island that was kind of named after that, but it's in Bristol Bay. It's my point here. So we cruise out to this destination. And he's like, we got to start filling up sandbags. So we're filling up sandbags, right? And before you know it, you know, the old man's just telling story after story. And all of a sudden I look up past this old man. I see a big old Kodiak bear. And I'm like, dude, there is a bear. And he's like, what? Bear! And he gets up. I've never seen an old man, you know, stand up faster than, you know, he was like Peter, you know, in the Bible, running on water, because he was running on water, jumped in the skiff, and the bear starts running. When it starts seeing us move, the bear starts chasing us, right? Oh, so yeah. I'm in the skiff, like getting the skiff, and I'm pushing out, and the bear's coming out in the water towards me. So I finally like lunge out, and this old man's going through all of his shit. And the bear finally like starts to take off. And then all of a sudden, this man pulls out an Uzi, right?
A legit Uzi.
Legit Uzi, and he just pointed towards the beach, fully automatic. And I'm like, holy shit! Because I'm the only thing I saw in Uzi was like Rambo, you know, and this was an OG hunter. And I was like, dude, what are you doing? And I was like, aren't there like permits and like hunting? Like, what is going on? And he's just like, there are no permits up here, son. And I was like, holy shit. And, you know, the bear, you know, I'm pretty sure it was gone. But if it was behind the bush, you know, that's a pissed off bear now, you know, getting hit with 9mm Uzi. And then he just starts telling these hunting stories. So like, so when I hear about like hunting community stories like that, that's kind of what draws everybody together. Because I think everybody who's been hunting for a while has a crazy story about a dude with an Uzi or something shooting, because the old school hunters that didn't have the permitting and all that, it is a whole different breed of hunters, but they're still a part of this hunting community, which I love.
It's just like those stories are the episodes I've done where it's just like us hanging out and telling stories, whether it's old stories like that one, or whether it's like we just finished something up and I'm recording an episode like while we're sitting around the campfire and telling stories of what happened over the past 3 days or whatever. Those are my absolute favorite episodes because I didn't grow up with that. I didn't get to grow up and hear those stories from the guys like at hunting camp or anything like that. You know, I didn't have the old man like sitting back and telling me all those stories. And so now like, I just eat those up, man, dude. I like crave those like crazy stories.
What's also cool is you're making your own stories as you go. Like and I think a part of what you're doing with your podcast is you're being able to get so many people on your platform to share those hunting stories. So even though you didn't get it, you're by far 100-fold catching up on your hunting stories.
Well, and it's funny, you know, and I mean, and I think about it and I'm like, yeah, I do have my own like kind of crazy, stupid stuff I've done, wild stories, you know, nothing, not quite an Uzi with the brown bear. But, you know, I mean, even my first hunt, like I've told that story 100 times and it's like I was the dumbass that decided to like, I've never gone hunting before. I'm going to pick up bow hunting. I'm going to go on a solo DIY elk hunt, you know, out in Idaho, public land. Just, I'm like, yeah, I've watched it. I mean, and I knew what my chances of success were. I was fully well aware. But like, I ended up going out there and a freak snowstorm blew in and I tore both of my knees while I was out there and had way too much weight in my pack. Had to like satellite call a buddy to, dude, I went in with an 80 pound pack.
Jeez. And you haven't even gotten your elk.
Exactly. And it was, part of that was the snowstorms completely screwed me over and I had to like repack everything and didn't have time to plan for it. Cause I mean, I didn't know what to prepare for. And I was also, you know, I was like, also I need all of these things. And my pack, it's crazy thinking about how much it's changed since then. But yeah, dude, I ended up having to like satellite call my buddy and he brought in his horses and like packed me out with my,
now that is a buddy, dude. That is a real OG buddy to do that, man. Yep. And wow, is he your buddy because you knew the resources he had?
he is my buddy because of social media. He found out that I can't remember. We've talked about it on the podcast. I've had him on the podcast right after the hunt. We recapped the hunt, and then I had him on just a couple months ago when I released episode 200. Because what I did is I took my recording equipment with me when I went out. I started this podcast months before I ever went on my first hunt.
Dang. The balls on you.
Oh, the amount of shit I got for having a hunting podcast and never having hunted, let alone killed an animal. Like,
that's great. That's great.
It was awesome. I loved it. But so I was doing like an Instagram live. I was hiking down from Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles. I was hiking back home. It was just, I was like my morning hikes. I'd do these up and then I'd do an Instagram live on the way down and talk to people. And he reached out and he's like, hey, so I saw you mentioned you're hunting in this unit or in this area in Idaho. I used to be like a ranger back there and do all this stuff. He's like, if you ever need any tips or any help. And so I just kind of started talking to him and he pointed me to some areas and I made sure to put his contact info in my phone. He's like, hey, if you need help packing something out, I'm just over the border. He's in Montana now. He's like, I'm just over the border a few hours away in Montana. I'll come out and, you know, bring in the horses, help you pack out. I'm like, dude, you're awesome.
Well, that's the type of call when you call him up. He's like, damn, why did I answer my phone?
Well, that was in constant contact with them and some other people. And I was like, something's wrong with my knees. Like, I can't even walk a mile with no weight. Da, 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 da. Like, I was fucked. I had to swallow so much stinking pride to tell him to be like, dude, I need you to come help me out. Cause he had opened that door for me and he had hinted at it, but he was letting me make the decision. He wasn't just being like, all right, bro, I'm coming in to come get you. He was like, all right. So, you know, he was basically saying without saying it, saying like, Sam, if you need to ask me if you want me to come in.
Yeah.
And I did. And there's a great video of him rescuing my ass up on YouTube. The Adventure Cowboy, Clayton Markser. Amazing dude.
Adventure Cowboy. Dude. Yeah, great guy.
Oh, you know Clayton?
Yeah, yeah. I met him at the car booth last time they had SHOT Show.
Okay.
That is great. Big old boy. That's a big old boy. So you got the right guy to help carry you out.
He's good people. That's funny. You know, again, small world on social media and all of this.
He is great people.
But yeah, man. So, you know, you're talking about all these people in the hunting industry that have this history and stories. Who do you look up to? When it doesn't even have to be somebody, this storied person or anything, but like, who do you look up to in the hunting industry? Who do you think does it right?
Man, there's a few of them, but Bert Sorensen, man, that guy's he's a beast.
I was actually just hanging out talking with Bert at the Big Sky Total Archery Challenge.
Yeah, dude.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's just good heart, good people, and he's just a beast.
Bert is great people. And another person that's just like super encouraging to anyone that wants to learn and get better and quality people. Is there anyone else that you just really think does it right in the hunting industry, who you think you look up to?
And I really look up to Evan Hafer, owner of Black Rifle Coffee. Him and I go way back. I worked with him way back when I was first with Manspot, back when Instagram only had, like, I think it was 15-second videos. Mm-hmm. That's when I started working with Black Rifle, was way back then. And me and Evan, when we first met, Black Rifle Coffee was sharing an office space with a lawnmower repair shop. Like, crazy. That just down there in Salt Lake City. So me and Evan created just a real close, just bond back then, and I've always respected him, you know, ever since. And he's a big archery hunter, and he just gets out there and does it. But this year, I'm not sure if you've seen the grizzly he got, but wow, it's just one of those things when you see somebody like Evan get a big grizzly like that, you know, you're just like, good on you, man. Like, that, you're a good person, and seeing you harvest something so beautiful and massive, it's just like they deserve that, and they earned that. And so Evan is just another one of those people that I can't say enough nice things about. I'd also say another one is Josh Bomar.
Josh Bomar.
That guy, I just love how just open he is with the way he preps for a hunt. He shows him shooting, practicing, and then he when he does make a post about a hunt, I think he gives the proper just respect to every animal that he brings down. He's all about education. He's all about, not making things worse, but making the environment better afterwards. So I think Josh, just, he does it right with how he does it. And he also says he shares his experiences and his challenges when he's also on social media as well. Like, he broke a bow and he's like, oh, this bow has this story. So you learn the story about the bow, and then he fixes it, takes it on a hunt, brings down an animal. So for him, like, what I've learned about him is he is just infused within the hunting community, and it's his way of life.
And I mean, you want to talk about enormous dudes. Like,
he's like Captain America, like, hunter. Ripped, just ridiculous. And he explains his, like, fitness stuff too. I'm just like, if anybody's got it made, he's got it made. When him and his wife were pregnant, I was like, aha, your life is going to change. And he didn't skip a beat. I was just like, how?
he's the million-dollar man. He's got to be like half bionic or something.
I am convinced he is. Glad I'm not the only one who thinks that. But yeah, much respect to him.
So you are a big gun guy, but have you gotten into the bow hunting at all? Have you tried picking up a compound bow yet, or any of that?
You know what? I have, just like Evan with his Hoyt bow. But I haven't bought my own bow. So I think I'm kind of waiting to, I mean, I need to do it. I mean, I got some of the targets for it, 'cause I did get a crossbow, you know, 7-point crossbow, which that thing had so much force behind it. I didn't realize how strong those were until I shot it through this Velociraptor target, and then it went through two 2x4s behind it. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, this is literally like a bullet. I had no idea the force that compound technology could even make until I had done that personally myself.
Oh, it's wild, especially with crossbows. There's a reason that I would say most places, I think they combine their crossbows with rifle season. Like, you are not allowed to use those during archery season.
Now I know why, man. That was a ruined arrow real quick. And that was from like 100 yards away. I was like, yeah, I'm good. No. Had no idea.
I'll tell you what, like, getting into the world of bow hunting, the first time you get in range on an animal, any animal, with your bow, and you take that shot, there's something, like, I'm a gun guy, and like, it was guns, and people have heard this story before, it was guns that got me into hunting. I used to teach marksmanship. It was like a heritage and marksmanship program. It'd be like a weekend clinic. People would come out, and we'd teach them how to shoot with a sling and like super basics. And we teach them American Revolutionary War history at the same time. And I got good enough at shooting to where I was like, okay, well, punching paper is kind of losing interest. I need to do something else. I'm like, well, I might as well get into hunting. And then, dude, I found bow hunting. I didn't touch a rifle for 3 years. It was,
you saved a lot of money on ammo.
Oh, yeah. But I spent it all on gear.
There's the trade-off.
Oh, it was bad. But I tell you what, man, there's something, and like, I will hunt with a rifle all dang rifle season, no problem. But like, there's something about just getting in close with a bow and doing it that way. There's just like something so visceral and like primal about it.
That's, yeah, I get it.
It's just crazy, man. Like having to be in like sub, you know, sub 60 yards. Like I prefer being sub 40 yards if I can, but like having to get in that close on an animal, and it's like, you're defeating all its senses in its own environment. Like
when you can see the white in its eyes.
Oh yes. And I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I've got stuff up on my wall here that I shot at 600 yards away too. So I will take any opportunity to hunt that somebody gives me that I have the ability to take. Like, you know, like I said, you want to put me in a heated blind that you're going to drive me to on an ATV. Hell yeah, I'll do that. Again, let's, I'm going to say that's what it is. Don't
you know? But they wanted to give me that transparency, baby. Give it to me.
Oh man. So, but speaking of guns, and you know, I can't let you get away without talking a little bit about the Second Amendment and kind of current events and what we're seeing going on in the country. You know, we're seeing a lot of government control being exercised, and a lot of, you know, without getting too political about it, we're seeing a lot of government control being exercised, a lot of things being mandated. What do you see happening over the next few years?
Oh, honestly, man, I mean, it all starts from somewhere. I mean, it's all out control. Is this what it is? And it's sad to see, because I mean, honestly, what we're seeing here, we're seeing what happened. I mean, I know when people say this and people are like, oh, okay, but it's literally our own little Nazi Germany of, you can't go here without these papers, without this proof. And it's defeating the whole point of America. And we're just being divided more than ever. I mean, the news is not being used to educate. It's being used to manipulate. And, It's sad. It's sad to me. And people can argue with that all day long. And it's like, no, that's exactly what is happening. And if we don't stand up for our rights or vocalize it, they will be taken away. It's as simple as that. And I know a lot of people don't want that to be true, but we can see that our politicians have sold us down, you know, the river. They've sold our rights down, and they've literally just been taken step by step. You know, law by law. I mean, there's so many laws. You can't do anything. I mean, we're the most taxed nation in the world right now from everything. And you're telling me this Revolutionary War started because we weren't even being charged 2%. And even then, our American ancestors were saying, we are being taxed to death. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to think about how far we've come and how far we've allowed it to happen. So now, to me, you have to stand up for your rights and you have to choose a side. You can't be lukewarm. You either have to be hot or cold.
That's the thing that kills me, is because I've always been pretty middle of the road. I've kept a lot of friends around that have very like drastically opposing views to me. And I feel like you used to be able to do that. Like the drastically opposing views, it didn't put you on a side necessarily. It was something you could talk about. It was something you could reason out. But now it's with everything that's going on and being forced, you do. Mm-hmm. You have to pick a side.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the whole thing about me, is it's just choice. You want to wear a mask, you want to get the vaccine, cool. That's great on you. Just don't force anyone to do something they don't want to do.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, talking about whatever, the vaccine and COVID specifically, it's not that we're sitting here saying
we don't want any vaccine. We don't want it to exist. It needs to be destroyed and no one should be allowed to. No, we're saying we want people to make the choice. If you want to get the vaccine, go ahead and get the vaccine. It's your personal choice. It's when mandates start coming down. It's when consent is removed from anything that it becomes, you know, we're talking about taxation. What's the difference between taxation and theft? It's consent. So if I'm not consenting to a tax, it's motherfucking theft. There's no question about it.
Yep, you know? Absolutely.
What makes sex rape? Like the lack of consent. Yep.
Exactly. And for a lot of people, it takes somebody that they trust. And when they speak out on something, then they listen. And then it almost like something clicks inside their head. Because I've gotten so many people, you know, that didn't even really care about the Second Amendment just because they weren't taught about the Second Amendment. And then when they heard me speak out on it, they're like, oh my gosh, I went out and bought my first gun because of what you said. And to me, that means a lot with, you know, I'll use the word influence, but you can either be influenced for good or you can be influenced for bad. And I believe with my platform, I'm always trying to do it for good. And when I hear stories like that, where a light bulb clicked in somebody's head and then they're like, I've been paying attention to politics now. I've been paying attention to my rights. I actually read through the Bill of Rights for the first time. Those are the types of stories I love because people haven't been brought up to be a patriot. They've just been brought up in the school systems of indoctrination, not education. So when they do get a positive influence from somebody, that's all it takes. And then it's almost like they've taken the red pill or the blue pill, which one are you, or the green pill, whatever it is, which one are you going to take? And once they allow themselves to be open up their mind to something different, everything can change. And I think that's the way the American people need to be is like, here are your rights. This is what's been taken away. And this is why it matters.
Question is, do you think enough people are going to wake up in time?
Well, it's also a means of how many people are going to wake up, but we're also going to have a pivotal moment when it comes to like just what happened in Afghanistan. We went over there. We tried to make the best changes we could. We trained their personnel. We gave them all the tools necessary to defend themselves, get their freedom, have, you know, their patrolling, keep the Taliban back. The minute we pulled out and we gave it to them, what did they do? They surrendered. No fight. And to me, that's what their freedom mattered to them. Were they willing to fight and die on the streets for it? And the answer obviously is in front of us. They put down their weapons and the Taliban just rolled right in. And you have to be able to be willing to fight and die for your freedom. And I think that's what so many people have a problem with now is, could you picture yourself dying for your freedom? Obviously, my answer is yes. I would die tomorrow if it means I could defend my kids' freedom and my freedom. And I think people have to mentally have that in their mind of at what point would I lay down my life?
And I think it's a line really needs to be drawn in that it's happening so slowly. It's the whole boiling the frog idea right now.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Where it's like a lot of people will say that. And they believe it. And it's an honest statement. Like, I would die for my freedoms. But then they just don't notice when they're slowly being eroded away. They don't realize, because it's happening so slowly, they don't realize it's like, now is the fucking time to take a stand, bro.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right. And I think, obviously, since this is a hunting channel, we got a lot of hunters. We have to understand that the Second Amendment wasn't made for hunting. Yep. Not at all. Zero. It was made because of tyrannical governments taking over. That's why we have guns. And when we see this tyranny, it's going to come to a point where it's just like, okay, we have these guns for a reason. Our forefathers realized that this was so important. We will need these guns at some point if we are being taken advantage of and a tyrannical government is forcing us to do things we don't want to.
Mm-hmm. So, George Washington.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you've probably seen the meme. George Washington, me and my boys would have been stacking bodies by now.
and along those lines, I'm not telling people, obviously I don't want to tell people how to use their agency, but what I do want to tell people is educate yourself and choose what best suits your freedom needs.
That needs to be educate yourself and choose what suits best your freedom needs. That sounds like the sounds like the perfect tagline for a commercial. Welcome to the man spot. Choose what best suits your freedom needs.
You know, I've been on a few watch lists, you know, so I got to watch out what I say.
Oh, well, man, on that note, where can people find the man spot? Where can people follow along?
So I'm on Facebook, The Man Spot, Instagram, The Man Spot, backup page, Man Spot, and YouTube, The Man Spot _. I need to bring that back to life, but you'll be able to follow along as I homestead my property and just continue trying to make funny content related around our Second Amendment and, you know, family shenanigans.
There we go, man. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm glad we got to make this happen. Had a great chat, man.
Good. Yeah. Thank you for having me on and continue doing what you're doing.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Another big thank you to Vaughn for taking the time out of his day to hop on the line and have a chat with me. Y'all make sure to go check out The Man Spot. I've got links to his socials and the website in the show notes page. That's thewildinitiative.com/210. So make sure y'all check that out. Also, again, y'all, I would greatly, greatly appreciate it if you just took a quick moment, head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, leave a rating and review for the podcast. It just hugely helps with growth and the discoverability of the podcast. It would mean a lot. I really appreciate all y'all that have been consistently logging in, subscribing to listen. But if y'all would take that quick moment to leave that rating and review, it would mean a ton. All right, y'all, that'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this podcast inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher and head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from The Wild Initiative family, and more.